www.sundaysbest.com. Again, for Sunday, April 24th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Be sure to catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. It's 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it is the waxing Buddha's full moon. Whoa, it will be at 10:24 p.m. tonight, Pacific Daylight Time. And just as a visual, you know, you'll see the moon straight up overhead, and to the right is Jupiter, intelligence of storytelling, and to the left is Mars and Saturn. It's just a glorious show, and we will explore its import in tomorrow's Earth Day. But also remember, the Buddha's full moon was, you know, when he was born, and also when he attained enlightenment with his back pressed against the Bodhi tree. So that's a very good thing to do today. Press your back against a Bodhi tree. All trees are Bodhi trees. We're all in this together. Tomorrow's also Passover and Hanuman's Day. And today is John Muir's birthday. John Muir, born 1838 today, who said, "On no subject are ideas more warped and pitiable than on death. Let children walk with nature. Let them see the beautiful blendings and communions of death and life, their joyous, inseparable unity as taught in woods and meadows, plains and mountains, and streams of our blessed star, and they will learn that death is stingless indeed and as beautiful as life, and that the grave has no victory, for it never fights. All is divine harmony." Well, poignant words to take to heart. I was at the Goldman Environmental Awards ceremony last night in Washington, D.C. Really, truly, oh my goodness, honoring the best of our species, triumphant against all odds and protecting beauty. We honor creative disruption in service to harmony, all worthy and deserving of our protection and embrace and renewed dedication on all our parts. You know, this Earth Day, plant tree, make beauty, declare what we're willing to protect. We will be honoring all of the awardees, but just a particularly wonderful person, Maxima Acuña, indigenous Peruvian farmer who won a lawsuit for control of her land. She bought a little plot of land. She had been sued by Newmont Mining, which wanted her land for access to a mountain lake to drain it for the proposed Conga gold mine. And she sings this beautiful song every morning going, you know, the lake gives me my life, the mountains give me my life, I dedicate to the beauty of them. So she couldn't let it go. And it was a hard-fought victory. Over 3 years, Maxima was beaten and harassed many times by police officers and private security forces. The pictures are daunting. She was knocked senseless. They tried to chicanery out of her property. They are still subject to harassment by police officers and private security forces backed by Newmont's Peruvian subsidiary. And we can donate to support Maxima and her family's legal struggle at earthworksaction.org/support Maxima. But what a radiant being. And you can see her little beautiful part of land right in the middle of big bad development ideas that are ongoing, and they stole her sheep, and they harmed her dog, but it's recovering. Anyway, all of that going, oh. So we want to honor creative disruption in service to harmony and that feisty part. You know, we do say when we expand our vocabulary, We expand our intimacy with the world. Language grants us access to the realm it describes. If we can speak of it, we can go there. And when we become conscious of a mythological being, an expanded part of our vocabulary, what that being represents becomes available for animation. All hail Eris, creative disruption dancing with harmonia. So more than perfectly, we welcome astrological ally, colleague Henry Seltzer, creator of Fantabulous Astro Software. Yes, I love it. And author of The 10th Planet, Revelations from the Astrological Eris. Henry says that the arrival of this living part of our symbolic vocabulary allows us to access her rousing woof. Well, actually, that's me saying that. But what he says is, time for everybody to stand up. Time for every voice to be heard. His website is astrograph.com. Welcome, Henry.
Oh, thank you, Caroline. Very nice to be here.
It's a pleasure. And we like all the backstage creative disruption leading to harmony and things going smoothly. So, yes, I guess we get comfortable with kind of like, and what beauty will emerge from this. So
kind of disrupt to get somewhere sometimes.
Yes. Well, I love that you're guiding us into intimacy with what Eris represents. We know that Eris is way out there in the Kuiper Belt. Guide us in. She was discovered September 2006, originally called Xena. All right. Anyway, you want to introduce her into the world here?
Well, I'd love to begin by trying to, you know, just give a little brief nod to the legitimacy of taking this new planet into account. I do call her a new planet, even though, the designation is dwarf planet. And basically, in, September 2006, she was named Eris after the goddess of chaos and discord, who is the sister of the god of war in Greek mythology. And I started with the idea of feminine warrior rather than sower of chaos, and that turned out to be very fortuitous, and I really feel blessed to have had the intuitive glimpse of that, and then all the evidence over these 6 years of research, more than that now, has just 10 years, has just piled up and piled up, and I feel very confident that you can consider Eris to be a factor that comes from deep inside you that only you can really tune into, because it's your own inner world that speaks, and it is a force for action. I found every feminist. I couldn't find a leading feminist for centuries that didn't have a strong Eris in their chart. And then when I wound up also articulating with Tim Taraktor in The Mountain Astrologer, he said he wanted to do an article from my book, and I said, how about paradigm shifters? And that turned out also to be very fruitful. So there's this article, recent Mountain Astrologer, and basically, it's exactly the same astronomical category as Pluto. And that was what my starting point was. Oh, boy, we have Pluto. We're so entranced with Pluto. We use Pluto in astrology all the time. Here's another one, just the same. So.
Yeah, we love that. I don't know Berta Cáceres' birthday, but she was especially honored at the Goldman Awards last night in Washington, D.C., because she was so brave. She was the awardee last year defending her people and the river. And also what's so crucial among all of these ardent, beautiful, effective people who are being honored is they speak in naturalness without shame of the goddess of the river. Again, it is wending its way, again, that reuniting of activism with animism. But Berta was assassinated last month, and there was an incredible honoring of her, beautiful three indigenous women poets, a video from the San Francisco Awards. But it was so beautiful, but they said, Berta didn't die, she multiplied. Right? So it was very much that fierce dedication that arises, wants to arise in all of our hearts, going, no, because there is this rousing. And she stopped dams, she stopped, she was also hugely globally known, and as many people have said, to assassinate her is like, they didn't know what they were messing with, but it was, it left everyone feeling like, oh, if they killed her, they could kill everyone. But then this rousing support, as you said, time for everybody to stand up. So I just wanted to bring her into play.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, just for this full moon and for us now, we have a Venus, Uranus, Eris. Eris just changed degrees. She's at 23 plus Aries, right? So Venus and Uranus, again, the power of beauty, the power of trickster coming to dance with this quality of Eris that you're going to guide us even further into. But it's like, that's exciting, right?
Yes, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this summer, which is the perfect conjunction of Eris with Uranus on June 9th.
Ah, then just right after the primaries in California. Yes, all hail Eris. What?
Election year season, isn't it, with Eris and Uranus? I mean, have we not seen amazing surprises and strange, obstreperous behavior?
Right, and it's no time to go whaley whaley team. You know, I just had bumper stickers made that say Flora Fauna 2016. We're electing the Earth, no matter what, and also anything could happen. But we particularly like the against all odds kind of quality of authenticity. That's, you know, it's like Granny Weatherwax, a wonderful character in Terry Pratchett, says. Somebody says, you can't do that impossible thing. It's a million to one chances against you. And she says, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10. Arr, and then she pulls it off.
Well, you're describing Bernie Sanders, aren't you?
I am. guide us into Bernie. I have all the charts of everybody almost here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love to use the example of Bernie Sanders. Similarly, as you invoked that magnificent spirit that was recently, unfortunately, assassinated, and may her spirit live on. I mean, I think that's, yes, absolutely. You know, the ones that take the stand, the ones that take the trouble to articulate, and I'm really referring to the whole feminist movement as well, these people that just had to come forward, you know, and I find the strong Eris. Well, I was interested in looking at Bernie for obvious reasons. I mean, I use him as such a good example of somebody who really does stand up for what he believes and what he feels like he must act upon. And win or lose, it's such an amazing run that he's made, and he certainly has completely altered the conversation, you know, I would say, with such honesty. I mean, for crying out loud, a spiritual politician. I mean, I know he's not overtly holy in any way, but they asked him about his philosophy of life. I'm sure this is something familiar to you, Caroline. And he said, my philosophy of life is simple. When you hurt, when your children hurt, I hurt. And that just struck my heart.
It was actually even braver. I mean, that was one version, but the interviewer said, what organized religion do you practice? And he said, none. But,
right.
Which is astounding, honest, you know, but he said, yes, your pain is my pain, your joy is my joy, you know, and we go, right. And let's throw win or lose into cauldron. I love James Carr's Finite and Infinite Games book, in which he says a finite game is about winning, an infinite game is about keeping everything in play. This is alive no matter what. Yeah.
I love it. Well, you know, Bernie, so to look at his chart, and I had also a transit to present in
this
chart.
I see.
He has such a close connection between Eris and Pluto. Now, Eris and Pluto, they're slow. Eris takes 550 years to move all the way around the zodiac. It's even slower than Pluto. Of course, it's at the farthest point of its elliptical orbit, so it's the slowest in Aries, which is where it is, since 1920. So almost everybody on Earth has Eris and Aries natally. But the question is, how does it line up with the planets? And you can look historically, too, at all these people from history, like William Blake has the exact Pluto-Uranus square with Eris exactly, more exactly even than the Pluto to the square to the Uranus in conjunct within 1 degree to Pluto. So it's very strong in his chart, and he was another one that, you know, articulated his own inner vision.
And you know, a robin redbreast in a cage puts all heaven in a rage. All hail Eris.
Tiger, you know, the tiger he was talking about,
yeah.
Nature has this violent side to it as well.
Yes.
And nature, yes, of course, yes.
So,
anyway, so Bernie has this opposition to Mercury, which makes sense because he's so articulate, and he does write. He's written more in the past than when he's in the Senate all this time. But the other thing is his Eris being at 5 degrees Aries and exactly 0 minutes, and his Pluto being 5 degrees Leo and 4 minutes, that is so very, very close. And he has that strength, that I consider that stamina. I consider that to be somebody that's kind of a handful, you know, that don't cross them, you know. They will be difficult people. And I find that any planet that Eris is involved with comes out to the fore and is involved with soul purpose or soul intention. That's what I'm discovering about this feminine warrior energy, that it's really about finding your deepest purpose in articulating that.
So just for the technical fun of it, with Eris in Bernie's chart, and then we'll get to Eris right on top of his Mars by transit, okay, with Uranus and
yes.
Venus. But do you use the Sabian symbol for 5 or for 6?
I would use 6.
Yeah, okay, well, that's just fun, because that's a square with one of its sides brightly illumined, choosing the most exhilarating possibilities in life. Opposite, right, his Mercury, dawn of a new day, reveals everything changed. We go, all right, we're going for that.
Wow, perfect.
Yeah, that's
perfect.
Really good, and, and then, yes. And then just his, yeah, his Pluto is, this is from your software program on my phone, I think, a conservative old-fashioned lady, cahooting with a hippie girl. We go, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we want to broaden the reach.
You should see him cahooting with a hippie girl for sure.
Right. Well, yes, and he his beautiful wife. Let's just, I do welcome this, because sometimes I'm resistant to new vocabulary in the language at first, and then I relent and going, all right, Eris, it really is a real thing. It really is a welcome part, especially as you guide us and give voice to it, going, oh, and how we can all kind of feel it. Eris, the defiant, feisty dedication to life, borrowed from animals, and, a little bit of ferocity, like I've been saying, even vegans, just imagine just a little bit of canine teeth, just a little woofiness, just goes, arr. Because I want to come back to Bernie, and you can go anywhere you want at any time. But I love this idea of fierce vitality. Is that a fair thing to say about?
Absolutely. Yes, I think so. Yes, it really has a strength to it. When I find it strong in charts, they're a difficult. I mean, even William Blake, God bless him, who was such a wonderful artist and so spiritual in his approach, he was somebody that would be feisty at times. You know, he could just charge out there and knock people down and say, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, you're beating up this woman on the street. What are you doing? And then the man later was heard to say, I felt as if the devil himself had run upon me.
Ah, I will obey no other man's structure. My business is to create.
Yes.
Let everybody create their own structure. Yes, it's a time for everybody to be a heretic. Heresy comes back into fashion, I think, because remember, it was an honorific in early Christianity and early religion before.
Did not know that.
Oh, no, because it means free thinker, right? So you'd say, boy, that Henry Seltzer sure is a heretic, and it would be praise rather than get you killed. So
I've always felt that would be praise.
Yes. Well. Don't you think Eris, one of her sacraments, would be heresy?
Yeah, certainly not taking anything at face value if it's not proven or if it's not something that speaks to your soul.
Yeah. And then I want to come right back to Bernie, and you guide us into the election and into the night above us, and then even customized how people might feel it in their own psyches and charts. That's really great. And then the U.S. chart. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Oh, the U.S. chart's fascinating. But just finishing with Bernie.
Sorry.
Oh, I just thought I looked at this one transit for Bernie. A lot of times I find a strong Eris just when I suspect that it will be there. And I thought to myself, well, what is the transit I want to look at for Bernie? It is the announcement. You know, like he was obviously cooking this up for quite a while. And as you mentioned, Eris is right on his Mars degree and has been close to his Mars degree for quite some time now. It just hit 23, which is his Mars degree, but it was also on 23 a year ago, which is when he announced. So in May, let me be precise here and say what the bringing up the transits. May 26th last year at 5:30 p.m. was when he was speaking in Burlington, which is his one of his favorite places. He was the mayor, and that was, of course, the 23 degree mark also before it retrograded back, you know, of Eris on his Mars. The moon was on his north node, and not only that, though, the sun was at 5 degrees of Gemini, which is his Pluto-Eris trine. So it was hitting his Eris very specifically on that very specific day. So I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
Now, of these candidates, and I'm only including three because I think the weasel is kind of slinking away now, but...
Oh, no dissing weasels, no dissing weasels. That's the problem with metaphors, right? The animals are rising up going, hey, no employing us to diss humans, you know. We use humans to diss others of our species. We weasels say, oh, my God, what a human. There is that. But also let me just...
Considering Donald Trump, who Bill Maher actually characterizes as a orangutan because of the color of his hair.
Yeah, no dissing orangutans.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No apologies. I'm just muttering to myself.
Okay. And then considering, the three, Donald Trump, Hillary, and Bernie, who would you think would have the strongest Eris amongst them, and who would have the slightest?
Well, I refuse to answer rhetorical questions. Carry on. It's my own era speaking.
I find it fascinating that they're very obstreperous. I don't think I'm offending obstreperous people by saying that he's an obstreperous person. Donald Trump has a rather strong Eris. He connects to his Eris rather connects to Uranus. It connects to Mercury. It connects to Pluto. And it's also opposite the mythmaker of Neptune, you know, film and filmic activities. TV was made for him, I believe. And, you know, there he is. You know, he's jumping both feet into the middle of everything.
So what degree is Eris in Donald Trump's
chart? Eris is 6 degrees, but, you know, of course, always... Oh, you can look at that. Yes, that's right. What's your Sabian symbol for that?
So it's 6+. I like also that it's in his 8th house of inheriting, because you know that his father was Woody Guthrie's landlord, and Woody, so he inherited this obstreperous in a bad way. We want to use disruption to disrupt disruption. But was Woody Guthrie's landlord, and Woody Guthrie wrote songs about what a horrible slumlord Donald Trump's father was. So there's the inherited kind of dynamic. So yeah, it can go any old interesting way. And then I want to just say and then toss it right back to you. But I like the image again. Oh, humans, you don't have to believe in this language. It's just a language that expands our vocabulary. And if you do, that's also really good. But so a metaphor feast, because Bernie Sanders' Mars, and where Eris is now, is curtains blown open in the shape of a cornucopia, you know, letting fresh air in. You know, it's like, all right, let's all open the windows and let the wind of democracy blow through the thing, blow through the old structures. Woo, they're howling now. So I love that.
Very good.
So,
and of course, that's Eris for everybody, since Eris is a 23. Eris and Uranus will be a 23 this summer.
Right. So for all of us, everybody, open your windows. Kitchen magic. It's all literalized metaphor. Yes, we want to open everything. So, I'm looking slightly at the wrong thing. I don't know. His Eris, the Sabian symbol, according to you, is a man succeeds in expressing himself in two realms. I'd like something a little...
Maybe one is here on stage and another one is in some dark place.
Well, yeah. No, I like also that some wag said that Donald Trump was as though the comment section of some vitriolic website, you know, suddenly put on human form and started glumping around the world going...
Well, to me, the Uranus really speaks. And I was surprised to see the strength of the Eris, because I think of that as for a good cause, but it doesn't have to be necessarily... I mean, he thinks he's doing the right thing.
So. No, I don't think he does. It's not even exactly clear. But I think, you know, part of what we want to kind of put on our work table for everybody, you know, is we do want to dedicate to and animate the abundance of opportunities being proffered to us now by big nature, going, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them, let's try healing them first, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors of Doom, wonderfully animated by Donald Trump. So yes, absolutely, feel free to guide us into how do we embrace and dance with this positive, yay life, thing, and what happens when we don't in the negative dynamic.
Well, you have said this all the time, Caroline. I remember you saying one time or many times that the Republicans wake up with their hair on fire and they're going to accomplish something and they're just going to go out and do it, you know, and where are the liberals? The liberals are kind of like still looking at each other, wondering if it's all meant to be, and trying to figure out a gentle way to do things. And maybe it's time for them to get a little rur in their stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't want to say that ever again, because I think that what we all feel is, you know, again, until now, and it really is until now, like rrr, it's the living narrative has so far outdistanced any of conventional news sources, you know, cable or whatever. The thing is, not a clue as to what's going on. So we do turn to the mythic news, going, because there's a vitality to be honored that is, you know, broad and exhilarating, and going, and it's your beautiful words, you know, it's time for everybody to stand up and time for everyone's voice to be heard.
Well, yes,
and
I really do feel like this is coming for, as always, coming, this archetype is coming into our vocabulary and our existence to make itself known at this time for a good reason. And I really do think it has to do with everybody in this, cauldron and strange circumstance and seemingly sometimes getting worse instead of better, to actually speak up and come to what is it I truly believe? What is it that I have to sign up for? And where do I get that? Only from inside myself. I don't get it from the TV, for sure. I don't get it from the word on the street. I don't get it from consensus thinking. I don't get it from simply rational thought process, linear thought process, without taking the mythic into more consideration, without taking what Jung brought forward as, you know, the deep unconscious into consideration. And so I have to find it in those places and look for it in a deep way and act on it.
Yes, let's see. We want to honor Bernie. We want to look at Hillary's chart. We want to look at the chart of the U.S. We want to look also at tonight, looking up to, just for the fun of it. All that is available, and then also, you know, after the break, I wanted to bring up Stella Coyote's chart, because she is the coyote dog I've lived, the living form I've lived with longer than a human, but she has very taught me about the adorable and dangerous powers of creative disruption more than anybody I know, going, ooh, because, you know, it's embodied in animals, right? I mean, it's part of the dance on this planet of kind of
absolutely
fierce,
absolutely, it is a fact of nature, for sure. I do associate it with what we normally consider violence in nature, but it's violence for a deep purpose. I mean, if a tiger jumps a deer and kills a deer, we don't say, oh, that darn tiger. We understand that's a natural process. The deer has to be part of the process, and the tiger has to feed its young, and that's what's happening. And I think, you know, there's similar ways of looking at this new archetype as what is following natural law within us. When we can see clearly what's in front of us, that this isn't such a good way, this is not treating people right, this is not treating the environment right, that there's something that rises up within us, I think, in response, and we can start to tune in and identify that and get past all the misdirection, you know, that comes along with this, sometimes with this society. And, you know, I noticed something when you were speaking earlier, when you started, about John Muir saying the creative disruption and service to harmony, and I couldn't help but think of Prince. Because, you know, when I looked at Prince's chart just now, this morning, having heard that terrible news about his death today or yesterday or what, so close, you know.
It's today.
I wanted to see where Eris landed, and it does make a good conjunction with his Mars, but even closer, it's an exact trine with his, almost exact, a degree off with his Uranus. And Uranus also high up in the chart. And I thought, well, Uranus is appropriate because wasn't he so unique and always changeable and always like don't you think of Uranus when you think of Prince? I mean, he just had that uniqueness of character, I think, and a disruptive quality that was in service. It also connects to his Venus, by the way, so also in service to harmony and the beauty.
I'll go with that. And we'll honor that and we'll honor you. It wasn't John Muir. It was me that said creative disruption in service to harmony. But John, okay. That's all right. But that's John Muir going on about death. And our wonderful guest today is Henry Seltzer, creator of really great astrological software and also author of The Tenth Planet: Revelations from the Astrological Eras, a new expanding part of our vocabulary, which I quite love. Astrograph.com, and we're going to go to our break music we've used for 20 years, but Taj Mahal, I think, really likes Eras. So here we go to our break music, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. He showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty horn. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty horn. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make his voice long.
Thank you, Taj Mahal, and that I always love that song we play for 20 years as our break music from a great album called Conjure. But it's very in honor of our mythological guest this hour, Eris, creative goddess of disruption in service to harmony. That's where we're kind of going with it. And our wonderful guest, Henry Seltzer, author of The Tenth Planet, Revelations from the Astrological Eras. It's a very useful part of this vocabulary. So there's so many places we want to go.
Sure.
We want to go to, James Hillman's chart and back to Bernie and Hillary and Ursula Gwynn's chart. I'm just pouring forth in an Eras kind of way and even my chart. But I also was thinking about, Chalmers Johnson wrote a great book called Blowback about U.S. foreign policy, and in one of the lectures he was giving about that book, he talked about the goddess Nemesis, and Nemesis has come to mean enemy, like, oh, that's my nemesis. But I like being creatively suspicious and liberating everything, cooking it back to, like, what is it? He says, no, Nemesis was only the enemy of empire. We go, oh. Woohoo! All right, let's liberate her. Welcome, Nemesis. Yeah, no, she's not. We want to liberate her from the false vernacular. Going right. So we're kind of reaching back for these animated metaphors that exist in the physical world that dance with the metaphoric world, and we go, oh, so that is part of, language. And then just for the fun of it, I was perusing your really useful book, and came across Ursula K. Le Guin, one of my favorite authors in the world. And I thought it was also great because the full moon is on exactly to the degree on her rising sign, 2+ Taurus. And the moon, as the moon right now, as we're convening, is 28+ Libra. That's her sun. So she's very here. And I love the Sabian, according to Steve Eardley, for 28+ Libra, which is men toiling in a dark pit, a woman calmly lowers a rope. There we go. So it's a wonderfully spicy, witty image. But Ursula K. Le Guin, do you want to just tip a little bit of the hat to her? Eris?
I would have to, yes, I will, and just let me flip.
Apologies.
Here we are. Yes,
okay.
Right here. So, yes, it's been a while since I thought about her chart. I remember being impressed with her, as you are. The Left Hand of Darkness is certainly like just a record-breaking book, and I mean, so unique and amazing the way she expresses things in her viewpoint. I did look into the timing of some of her early work, and yes, I did find that Eris was actually right there with her Mercury, as I recall.
I apologize for surprising you with the reference, but I did find it really fun, and I just wanted to bring up, you know, just we bubble forth with heartening things for all of us. A wonderful ally just sent me all of the Wizard of Earthsea books, which I read a million years ago, but I'm rereading them. They're quite pertinent and powerfully useful. And in The Wizard of Earthsea, the first of that, I love this moment where it's about the initiation of Mars. The young, talented wizard oversteps, acts out of pride, inadvertently invites great shadow of evil into the world. It's all kind of, it's like campaign coverage, really. And then it's pursuing him, you know, and he goes back to his non-flashy, authentic mentor who says, it is time. You're the hunted. It's time for the hunted to hunt the hunter. You want to reverse your dynamic here. And that's the way to dispel the darkness, is not violently, but just to turn the thing. And then he says, but first, and this is very in the sky for all of us, sky-earth story, he said, but first, you know, you derived your true name from the waterfall. Go back to the waterfall. Do not be like a stick in the stream. Become the stream. Become the waterfall. Become the river. Become the ocean. Then go hunt the hunt. You know, go. You know, hunt the hunter. And I'm just all that praise Ursula K. Le Guin. Say what?
No, I say that speaks to natural process, I think, is what you're getting at there.
Right, yeah. And I think pertinent for all of us now, going, yeah, everybody, find your true name, don't be the stick world, become the larger thing, and then go face what's been pursuing you, right?
Oh, yes, find your true name, exactly.
Yeah. So,
She did prove to have strong ears, of course, when I looked into it, as you were indicating, and that's why she's in the book, naturally.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, also, she was the basis, her writing was the basis for one of the early films of Miyazaki.
Oh.
You must be a fan of Miyazaki as well.
Deeply, deeply. Oh,
well, I think it was Princess Mononoke was the one.
Oh, that's the best. Oh, they're all good. But Princess Mononoke is so pertinent, and anybody, we should all watch it again. And if you haven't seen it, it's so pertinent to now. Again, disruption, powerful defiance. You know,
and he always has these feminine heroines that become more powerful than they started. And, you know, I was just drawn to his work very much. And somebody pointed out, actually, one of my colleagues pointed out, that, have you looked at Miyazaki's chart? And boy, there it was, you know, a lot stronger.
Well, but there it was. I do want to, you know, invite in the specificity, because part of my resistance, which I have overcome, but sometimes astrologers will go, oh, it's all this thing, or it's all Chiron, or it's all the thing. We go, it's a symphony. It's a symphony. It's all everything. And we go, right. So, but let's go back to right now, and I want to go back to the election and the chart of America. Let's do that. There we go.
Well, I was interested to find that there's a strong Eris in this nation's chart. If you use the Sag rising chart, is that the one that you favor?
No, I like them all. I like them all, but I like the 9 plus Scorpio rising, derived from the back of a $100 bill. But
yeah, I know, that's a good one too.
But carry on.
The thing about Eris in the U.S. chart, if you do use the Sibley chart or the Sagittarius rising chart, which does have a certain amount of currency, especially after 9/11, when Pluto and Saturn were exactly opposite each other on the ascendant and descendant of that chart, which is quite interesting. But anyway, there you have in the first house, Eris. Well, you can think of this country as standing up for itself, kind of making it happen, going after what it needed to go after.
What?
And the other connection.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Okay. All right. Well, we'll let that. We'll keep going. But I had to bark at that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's also Eris is 8 degrees of Capricorn in this U.S. chart for 1776, July 4th, 1776, 5:13 p.m. And an exact 150-degree aspect, or an inconjunct, I call it, is Uranus at 8 degrees of Gemini. So how could we see, well, of course, there's the revolutionary beginning, you know, that they were rebelling, that's how they created it in July 4th, 1776, by rebelling against the status quo of England, you know. And then, to me, seeing Eris with Uranus was very profound, because what I got from that was all the times that it's been, if you think about the violent action in defense of their intentions, whatever they might be. You know, you can argue about whether they were right intentions, but, you know, to acquire land, you know, to get, acquire resources for the invasion of Iraq was definitely awful. It was a terrible act against international law, and I lamented deeply all the people that were killed and suffered. It was done for resources, and so, you know, to get the oil. And so to see that that was part of the national agenda in that way, or the national agenda of some of the rich people, the fat cat oil people, perhaps, that were George Bush's allies, at that time of the invasion of Iraq, Pluto was was close to being opposite of the Mars in the United States chart, which could represent the military, and Eris was also at 19 degrees of Aries, so making a trine with the Pluto in the sky, and then at that point Eris was on the Chiron in the U.S. chart, 20 degrees. And of course, this is whatever rising you pick. Seeing Eris on the Chiron really spoke to me as well, that, you know, there was this action that was kind of all happening in the context of Eris that was a military action, and the angst and the difficulty of the United States public. Chiron in the fourth house of the U.S. chart, according to the Sibley rising, the Sagittarius rising chart, I think it's been, you know, of course, that also covered the period right after 9/11 when it was such a tragic time. And all the loss of life. And so, but the angst of the United States citizenry seeing the invasion of Iraq take place, I think, was profound. You know, there was that huge movement not in our name, and we were forced to just, the population here was just forced to stand by and watch as terrible things were done, really with our kind of, unsponsored consent. So I thought that was very profound, that transit.
No consent. Well, it's interesting, there's a transit to that dynamic now, and we go, and there's the complexity of Barack's unwelcome visit to Saudi Arabia, where they didn't even send a driver, because there's grumpiness there, but also the lawsuit that's going through the U.S. courts now to hold the Saudi government liable for 9/11 damages. We go,
I didn't know about that.
There's a lot going on. So it is all well. How shall we dance with disruption? You know, again in a good way. And let's bring it back to. Okay, so there's the U.S. chart over there. Okay. We left Hillary out of the dynamic. So you know, bring that into play. What do we root for in her? I have some wicked answers, but what do we root for in her in a good way? Where would she be happiest?
The transit is what I'm most interested in with Hillary, because she doesn't have a very strong Eris in her natal, and that makes sense to me, because she is more of the insider, not exactly sticking her head out and speaking for her own inner truth.
So where is it, Eris in her chart?
It's 6 degrees, also same as Trump.
Oh, okay.
Speaking two sides of her existence.
Right, okay.
And perhaps. And, you know, it does make... it doesn't make any real exact... You know, it's just an example of a chart. There's not very strong Eris there, and... I mean, I know she's a bit of a feminist, but I mean, you could see in a way that she is more of the nature of not a rebel, but a conformer, a certain way to what's in the political game for her. You know, I mean, I see that as less of a, I see her as less of a rebel than I would say either Trump or Bernie.
And then we would notice that, you know, her sun is at 2+ Scorpio, the full moon tonight is at 2+ Scorpio. It's got a very positive image, a happy house raising party among happy Western pioneers, the capacity to rouse collective activity and go, yes, right this way. And that's why I think, you know, she'd really be happiest and best expressed, you know, going to go work for Habitat for Humanity. There you go. What a good idea. And let me
trying to build a habitat of a different sort, I think.
Yes, exactly. And again, I want to blame it on, it's not me speaking, Caroline Casey, the Visionary Activist Show with our guest, Henry Seltzer. It's Eros coming through me going, there, and the Republicans could nominate her as their candidate. No, that wasn't me. I didn't say that. That was Eros.
No, okay. I didn't hear you say that.
No, exactly. That would get everybody out of the conundrum. All right, so that was Eris.
Well, she's got Mercury at 21 degrees Scorpio, and it may be on her ascendant by this one birth time that they give.
Yeah.
Here we have Eris at 23, Aries, so there is that. It's an inconjunct, but there is that. And, of course, Uranus is right there. So I don't know, having her Mercury stimulated, I suppose it would be her ability to speak well of her achievements. She certainly had an achievement just recently, and as we come into this full moon, so...
Okay. Again, we need many kinds of commentators, many different kinds of campaign coverage, because again, conventional coverage is not adequate for what's unfolding all around us. And we go, and if you don't have the chart handy, don't let me annoy you. But we were speaking of James Hillman, who was, you know, a great rascal and liberator, and the first guest on this radio show on September 5th, 1996. Do you have you said that Eris is
I have a beautiful thing about him because I found in my research that if there's a planet that makes a close contact with Eris in the natal chart, that planet is magnified, and that planet, yes, just in and of itself is very important, and I see it again and again and again. And I see when you have Eris with Saturn, by the way, many times it has to do with defending the underdog. I see that very consistently as well. Marianne Williamson, for example, has the square between Eris and Saturn. With him, it was really beautiful to see because, starting with Jung, just to give you a background of this, Eris in Jung's chart is exactly trine to Mercury, and it's a perfect trine, the same degree of trined signs, you know, that wasn't Aries in his chart. When you turn around and look at Hillman's chart, you see the conjunction, Mercury and Eris in conjunction. And he was such an articulate, as you knew him quite well, and he's such an articulate. He spoke in such complete sentences, and it was just... It's just you were just in awe to listen to him put it together. It was unbelievable, and of course the writing, so much writing and so articulately expressed, was certainly the best literary. I would say, wouldn't you? The best literary voice of Jungian.
I don't know. I mean, I want to be, you know, kind of him and Eris, because he was, you know, contentious, and there's the disruptive kind of dynamic, in a good way, and you know, many who really appreciated him said, you know, all that multiple Aries was not benefited by hagiography, but was more benefited by woof woof and challenging, because he would say anything, in a lot of ways. But for instance, after the radio show.
Yeah, for that matter.
Say what?
So would Jung for them.
No, Jung, I think, was more careful because, you know. Well, all right, well, that's good. Let's have Eris. I see your Eris and raise you one. You know, yes, both. All right, both. But he still wanted to be academically respected. A lot, which is why his published writings are wonderful as in many ways and great secondary resources. But it's his letters that are really rich and lively because he was watching over his shoulder. There was a little tight thing. Anyway, all right. But now back to that. But I do want to just give an Eris moment when I hosted James Hillman, first radio guest on the show, really good. And then I was sort of his mahout at a book signing for The Soul's Code later. And he was taking questions and somebody said, "What inspired you to write The Soul's Code?" And he said, "Young man, what possible use would my answer be to you?" Rawr. And I was like, "Oh, it's time to take the tired author back to his hotel room. There you go. Again, a kind of feistiness. But we do all hail Eris. And also we must, you know, people hearing this may have a resonance back to the 70s. Robert Anton Wilson and the Illuminatus trilogy, you know, kind of sometimes these works of literature and art and popular whatever, you know, kind of rise up again, and we go, because the Illuminatus trilogy was a kind of creative, Bible, I guess, you know, in the 70s. It was a wild romp. And that was where he also had the Discordians. And all hail, you know, Hail Eris was a phrase that he used. Do you want to guide us into Robert Anton Wilson and what you remember of the Illuminatus trilogy? And does it hold up? Should we read it again?
Well, I think so, yes. And I love his disruptive qualities and his great wisdom and how cheerful he was about bringing all the things that he could find, you know, to light and a cornucopia of wonderful insight. And when I went to, and of course, Hail Eris all his life, you know, with the Discordia Society, and I immediately went to look at his chart, not immediately, but as I was doing the research, of course, that came up, and I was kind of startled to find that there wasn't much of a strong Eris there either, until I realized by doing a little more research that his stated chart that they give for 6 p.m. was incorrect. So what I found was I found this very extensive note in an online presentation that they had gotten from him, a message about his chart data where he said 6 p.m., but he also said Leo rising very clearly, and that's 6 a.m. So if you look at the 6 a.m. chart that does have Leo rising, all of a sudden it all comes clear. It comes right into place. Eris and the moon are exactly sextile, which you often see in these kind of iconoclastic figures that are maybe a paradigm shifter in a certain way that want to see things in a different light. Eris is in his ninth house, which is characteristic of how he was always concerned with higher mind activities all the time. And it connects to his Mars as well, which is his outspoken nature and his energy, you know, for pursuing these things. And I just thought it was a perfect chart, a very strong Eris, and it all of a sudden made sense. And especially true, do you want to hear about his death chart? Would that be too mordant a subject to bring up at this moment?
No, that's good, as long as you circle back and reanimate the Illuminatus trilogy and what we get from the Discordian Society. But yeah, so...
Okay.
So
well, yeah. It's true, and just the fact that he was so involved with Eris, then I find that they exactly recorded the date of his death, and it was at 4:50 a.m. on January 11th, 2007. And it was exactly on a quarter moon, and we had the moon in the sky at 20 degrees Libra 57 minutes, and we had the sun in the sky at 20 degrees Capricorn in 55 minutes. We have Pluto in his natal chart in the 12th house of death and dying at 20 degrees of Cancer, and Eris in the sky makes the fourth point of the Grand Cross at 20 degrees of Aries. And I just thought that was kind of poetic about him and his work.
So it's a completion. Eris arrives to help send him off, and death completes him. Is that where he wants to go?
He certainly was not a stranger to death. Was something that he attacked as vigorously as any other of these deep topics that he was so fond of bringing forward in many ways, you know, and he had dealt with it in his life. He had lived with it. And I just thought it was interesting to see that. That is so remarkable to me, that those four corners of a Grand Cross that touches his natal Pluto in his 12th, I just felt so interesting, you know, that that would happen at just that moment of time, which they did record the exact moment.
And so,
what do you feel about the Illuminatus trilogy?
Well, I'm stirring it. I mean, again, just the focus on this mythological being and the reality of the planet in the Kuiper Belt, and welcoming at first reluctant, then welcoming, going welcome, sure. If we can speak of creative disruption, and again, as you say, you know, it's rousing now. Time for everybody to stand up, going rawr, and protection of life, and Berta Cáceres and the powerful, incredibly brave environmentalists being honored by the Goldman Awards, and so many people doing related work, and the young poet saying Berta didn't die, she multiplied, love that. And so with that in mind, I just remember a wonderful person giving me the Illuminatus trilogy in the late 70s, going, it's too wonderful, it's just, or maybe early 70s, it's too wonderful. And I go, yeah, because it did tie, it was a romp that was tantric sex and the Kennedy assassination and the demon imprisoned in the Pentagon. These are my loose remembrances, whatever. And the Discordian Society, somehow, that was important. I mean, but what do you...
He's so irreverent about everything. The way
yeah.
he would just pick up more and more information, kind of weave it into a, it was like a ball that was growing before your eyes, you know, like he was rolling along like this giant snowman that he was making. And when he had brought everything up, it was like, you know, and so I love the way he would puncture the conventional wisdom of the day, you know, and bring up.
And of course, he had a co-author, right? I mean, it's Robert Wilson and Robert Anton Wilson, right? Isn't that right? Yes.
We're talking about the same person, right? Robert Anton Wilson.
I thought there was two authors to the Illuminati trilogy.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that was him.
Oh, all right.
Maybe they quoted him differently at places.
I see. All right. Well, that's good. Okay. So what of the Discordian society do we want to bring back?
Well, I think that's the thing. Is it's such a lull of tempting distraction, you know, to sit back and watch TV as like a reality show and just try to somehow get through without doing the difficult things. I think, you know, it's just that we know what we have inside ourselves, and we can tune into that, and we have to have a lot of courage, though, to go there, don't we? To not go for what we're told, and not go for what seems obvious and political, something that will not get you in trouble with the banks or the government or something. But yet, only by sticking our heads out in a certain way can we really get to where we need to get to as individual humans and feel satisfied with what we've accomplished in our life, to feel like this is what I came to do, this is right, this is my thing, and not feel, as so many do, I think, just caught up in this sort of Kafkaesque machine that doesn't feed our soul.
I think we're kind of out of that box, but I love Hesiod, ancient writer, saying, you know, there were two kind of incarnational versions of Eris. One, you know, she the goddess of discord, she throws the apple that creates the Trojan War, and I go, oh, I want to liberate her from that. And then he says, and then there's the other Eris that is kinder to humans, and she's kind of positive rousingness that will move everybody to deeper dedication.
Even with that golden apple, can I say something real quick?
Sure.
That golden apple, she didn't start the Trojan War. That's a kind of a misconception, because that golden apple was, it said to the fairest, and then their competition is what got everybody in trouble, and they're going for who's the winner, who is the fairest, who's the one that's going to get the best-looking woman, is going to, you know, and all of that happened because they didn't take a different look at that idea of the golden apple and say, well, we're all the fairest.
Ah, okay. All right. I like that turn. That's good. So she got a bad rap. Okay, that's excellent. And then she is the daughter, Hesiod said she's the daughter of the darkest night, Nyx. And her mother is Hera. Is that right? Eris's mother is Juno?
I think that's right.
Ah, okay.
And I don't pay that much attention to all the details of the myth because it's come so alive for me in the astrology. I've just seen so many examples of it and really sussed it out, and now I can identify it. For example,
There we go. Well, you can identify it in the great vast void unfurling before us. But thank you. Do you want to give an Eris rousing, just, you know, time for everybody to woof? We're on our way out right now.
Yes, I know. Well, just I think it's fascinating that these new archetypes come along at the time when they're most sorely needed, and we've been talking about that. You know,
excellent. That's good. Woof, woof. All hail Eris. Again, creative disruption. May it lead to greater beauty. Rearrange everything. All right, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Erica Bridgman in Berkeley, and Yasha in Washington, D.C. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene at the perfect time. Yes, woof. This is Caroline Casey, Weaver of Context for the Visionary Activist Show, a show that aspires to wed spiritual magic and conscious, compassionate social activism. Join us every Thursday at 2 p.m. as we invoke and implement a more ingeniously cooperative and reverent world.
ever consider producing a community radio show? If that's the case, please pay attention. The Pacific National Board has approved a motion to implement 5 new hours of programming in Spanish per week at every station of Pacifica, which includes Houston, Los Angeles, Berkeley, Washington, D.C., and New York. If you or someone you know is interested, please send us an email to programacion-espanol@pacifica.org or visit your local Pacifica radio website.
You are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF.